Please be seated. In the beginning, when Yahweh created the heavens and the earth was a formless void, and darkness covered the face of the deep. While a wind from Yahweh swept over the waters, and then Yahweh said, "Let there be light," and there was light. Yahweh said that the light was good. And Yahweh separated the light from the darkness, calling the light day and the darkness night. And there was evening, and there was morning, the first day. It started in the beginning. Before all things were breathed into being, there was nothing except the unspoken word. And that word breathed from the dawn of time was with God. And that word, a word that still speaks today, was God. The word is the very same one that was, that is to come. This is a word that rings out in churches, to be sure, but also over megaphones, at protests, in the public square. This is a word that rings out on hilltops and mountains, forests and coves, in concrete jungles and gardens cultivated richly with love. The word of God is out. It's a word that rings loud like the peal of bells, calling us to attention, to focus, to center ourselves, to prepare ourselves for worship, to prepare us to live. If only we could hear it, if only we could hear the word over the mechanistic and digital noise of this age, the hum of the HVAC, the blast of a horn, pinging vibrations of disembodied reality and the beats in our ears. Nowhere alone. There's nowhere to cultivate the silence. Everywhere drowning out the word that still speaks, if only at a whisper. But you can hear it. I pray that you can hear it tonight. You can hear it in the rain plinking off the windows or the eagles circling overhead. Some days I have to head into the forest, leave the main trail and dive deeper into the wilderness to hear that provocative, logic-defying word. The word is wild, undomesticated, liberated. It's no wonder it's in the wilderness I can hear it most clearly. It's the song of the forest, the varied thrush and the northern flicker, the chatter of squirrels, leaves rustling as a bear approaches the tributary. The seasons change. Berries and leaves replaced by salmon. Creekside, they eat what they can, before once again taking a winter's rest. Sometimes I stay there for hours just to listen to the silence, to listen for that liberating word. And it's not long after I leave the wild that the song of the forest, the rhythms of life, are intruded upon by frenzy and urgency, the so-called civility of this urban existence rushing from A to B to the end of the alphabet, just to make it work. And we get by. Somehow we get by. While others work to satisfy appetites that will never be fulfilled. In the scarcity of an insatiable world where there's never enough, this is life in the 21st century. This is life in the city, under the prosaic hum of our own modern preoccupation. Political, corporate, and religious forces compete for dominance, feeding the insatiable appetites of a world driven by acquisitions and mergers, dominance and domination, rape and assault, murder and abuse, anything to make a buck and to stay on top. In this world, Weinstein's just the tip of the iceberg, the first tremors of a volcano about to erupt as hundreds, thousands, millions shout, "Yes, of course, obviously, me too." And this week I've sat in that silence, With all the stories that have surfaced, I've been sitting in silence, resisting the urge to speak out, fighting to listen, to dwell, to be brought to tears. Without tears, we'll get nowhere. Without weeping, we'll never get to confession. Without confession, we'll never build an effective resistance. And I confess tonight, my dear friends, that I am a sinner, that I am guilty in what I have done and in what I have failed to do. I too am guilty of the sins that have led many folks in this room to say, me too. I am the patriarchy, and I need to be dismantled. And this is happening, but too slowly. It's happening with God's help and with yours. After Jesus related his last parable, you know, the one in which he pissed off religious leaders and political lackeys, that one, they decided to spring a trap. And after Jesus spoke to them in the parable that suggested that they were complicit in all of these things, they tried to trap him in the question: is it lawful to pay taxes to the emperor, to the patriarch, or not? One step ahead of them, Jesus asks to see a coin, and they bring him a denarius, the kind of money no peasant could earn, more money than any normal human being could dream of. They brought him the keys to Chip Wilson's mansion and said, here, come on in, take a look around. Just don't break anything. Jesus walks in and keeps talking, his followers trudging in their muddy boots, perching on the imperial violet of that Rochebois sofa. The trap has been sprung and the bait switched. They say that house is worth $75 million at last count. I bet it's gone up. That kind of house that none of us could ever buy, more house than any normal human being could dream of. And Jesus is there with the henchmen of the powerful elite, those who sent their slaves to trap him, to take him down a peg, to assert their authority, to take what they want, to defend themselves, to put up another wall. They don't go themselves, of course, but send others on their behalf, not wanting to be personally reminded of their complicity in yet another oppression. Men accustomed to power and wealth won't take no for an answer. Jesus knows this, and he's ready for them. He takes a look at the coin, and he flips it over. He holds it up to the crowd, and with a flourish, he passes it around. Don't lose it in the cushions, he said. The priests will get angry. Whose head is this and whose title? He asks the assembled crowd as the coin moves around the room. Person by person, they turn it over, they feel its weight, and they stare. Illiterate farmers and fishermen, most of them. Junkies and social workers, bleeding heart types. Those who wouldn't understand the power of money, not from that angle, anyway. They can't read the inscription, but they understand its significance. They know whose picture it is, and their reaction is visceral. But then, this is what happens when you look into the eyes of your oppressor walking around with impunity. This is what happens when you see the image of the one who took everything, acting as though nothing happened. This is what happens when you see the religious leaders, those you thought you might be able to trust, chumming around with the ones who've done you wrong, claiming it's only business. As though justice, love, and shalom have nothing to do with it. Seething rage begins to rise, and the volcano heats up. The coin makes its way around the circle, finding its way back into the hands of the Pharisees' henchmen. Whose head is this, and whose title? Jesus asks. The slaves dutifully fall in line. They respond in united voice, the emperor's. You may have heard this story before, and you may have heard it as an argument for the separation of church and state, but that's not what is going on here, not in the least. It is a declaration of secession from the politics of empire and its fake news machine. It is a declaration of resistance against those who proclaim good news for some in order to distract everyone from the reality of those who've been trampled underfoot. Jesus, with his thoroughly Jewish imagination, knows this story, and he knows it well. Steeped in the Exodus tradition, he is the new Moses, confronting a new Pharaoh, leading the people out of life under occupation across the waters of the Red Sea. Rome, Jesus seems to be saying, can have all its money. It can have its coins. It can have its idolatrous story. It can tell itself that Caesar is king of kings and lord of lords. It can tell itself that the world's fruitfulness and bounty has come into being in and through the producers of wealth. But prosperity isn't the gospel. And the emperor wasn't there in the beginning. It was Yahweh. The patriarchs can tell themselves whatever lies they want. But Jesus says, we will not succumb. These lies will not rule over us anymore. Wherever we have participated in those lies, we must weep. Wherever we have participated in those lies, we must confess. Wherever we have participated in those lies, we must then resist. We will not worship the paterfamilias. We will no longer bow to the patriarchy. We must repent of our idolatry, our complicity in these things. We must shed our attachments to the comforts of the empires that captivate our world, our communities, and our hearts. We must root ourselves in the goodness of God, in the goodness of Creator's beloved world. We must root ourselves in a love that will not let us go, no matter how this disordered world throws things our way. Because this, and only this, is the way of redemption. This is the way of the cross. This is the way we will rise up, and out of the ashes we will arise. Out of the ashes of Egypt, out of the ashes of Babylon, out of the ashes of Rome, out of the ashes of slavery, out of the ashes of racism and white supremacy, out of the ashes of misogyny and classism, ableism, homophobia, transphobia, nativism and xenophobia, unfettered capitalism and hyper-individualism, out of the ashes of every idolatry this world knows, the religious varieties included, Christianity included, out of the ashes the Jesus movement will arise. We will rise out of the ashes of every idolatry and form of oppression that denies the beauty, interconnectedness, abundance, diversity, and inherent goodness of all of Yahweh's creation. But first we must weep. And then we must confess. And finally, we must resist the idolatrous empires that surround us, that dwell in the furthest reaches of our hearts. There's a challenge we face today. And that challenge we face tonight, dear friends, is simply this. We cannot do this work in and of ourselves. We cannot walk this road alone. But we will make this road by walking, arm in arm, hand in hand. We will arise and we will go with Jesus. Those of us who understand what it means to suffer under the hand of another or to cause another's suffering. Those of us who know the vulnerable contours of reality, those of us who are discovering resilience and grace too. Together, we will arise and go with Jesus as we struggle together to tell the story, to live the story to which Jesus bore witness in the face of great opposition. This is a story which we are inheritors of. So together, we will arise and go with Jesus out into the world to face those systems and moments of oppression and abuse, to bear one another's burdens and to become such a community, that while we may be marked with scars, we will also wipe away one another's tears, that while we may have inflicted wounds, we will also participate in mutual confession, we'll participate in healing, that while we have lied to ourselves, to God, and to one another, we will find life with truth-telling resistance and the promise of resurrection. In the beginning was the Word. And the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things came into being through God. And without God, not one thing came into being. What has come into being in God was life, and the life was the light of all people. That light shines in the darkness. That darkness did not and will not overcome it. In the beginning was the Word, and when that word rings out, it is always a word of liberation.